Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this next session. Our next speaker almost needs no introduction, and I'm sure you're all very much looking forward to his session. Bruce is an internationally renowned security technologist, often described as a security guru, and he almost needs no introduction, so I'm going to invite him straight onto the stage to make his presentation.
Hey, hi. Thanks for packing in this surprisingly crowded room. I appreciate you standing in line and braving the crowds. And there's an overflow room somewhere. Hello, overflow room. Hopefully you have better snacks than we do. So I want to talk about automation, autonomy, the Internet of Things, security, the future of our industry. So in 2011, Marc Andreessen said that software is eating the world. And what he meant by that is that everything is becoming a computer. And I think that's the way we need to think about the world. Now, your microwave is a computer that makes things hot. Your refrigerator is a computer that keeps things cold. Your smartphone is a computer that makes phone calls, right? An ATM machine is a computer with money inside. Your car used to be a mechanical device with some computers. Now it's a computer with four wheels and an engine. Or I guess more accurately, it's about 100 computer distributed system with four wheels and an engine. And this is happening at all levels of our lives, right? A nuclear power plant is just a computer that produces energy. And as everything turns into a computer, computer security becomes everything security. And this means two things. One, the knowledge that we have about computer security is suddenly broadly applicable to everything. And two, the restrictions and regulations and controls from the real world start getting imposed onto us. And the place where we're first seeing this collision is the Internet of Things. Now, when I think of the Internet of Things, I think of it in three parts. First, I think of the sensors that collect data about us and our environment. So smartphone location data, or smart thermostats and light bulbs that are sensing who's in the room. Or, I don't know, internet-enabled street and highway sensors that are sensing movement of people and automobiles. There are the smarts that figure out, that collect all that data, process it, figure out what it means and what to do about it. Right, that includes both processing and memory. And interestingly enough, a lot of it's in the cloud. It really is a surprise that the SmartSung smart television, which listens to you speaking in case you say, I want to watch channel 6 or the volume is too loud, but that voice-to-text processing is done in the cloud. The television ships the voice up to some third party, and then the commands are shipped back. Right? The processing is not done on the television, no matter how much Moore's Law has made processing cheaper. And so that's the second part. The third are the actuators that affect our environment. And the whole point of a smart thermostat is to turn the furnace on and off. Right? A driverless car will collect data about the environment and will use that data to decide where to drive and when to brake and, you know, all of those things that we expect a car to do. So you can think of the sensors as the eyes and ears of the internet. You could think of the actuators as the hands and feet of the internet. And you could think of the stuff in the middle as the brain. The internet now senses, thinks, and acts. And what's interesting to me about that is that's the classic definition of a robot. Something that senses, thinks, and acts. And to me, the correct way to think about the Internet of Things and the Internet in general is that we are building a world-sized robot without even realizing it. And what's interesting is this is not a robot in the classical sense, where we get our conceptualization of robots from the movies, from Star Wars, from other science fiction movies. And we know what a robot is, right? It has a metal shell. The smarts are on the inside. The sensors are on the surface. And the actuators are parts of it. This is not that. It is a distributed robot. It is not centrally controlled. Parts of it are controlled by different people and different processes. It doesn't have a singular goal or singular focus or singular intelligence that might achieve consciousness. And it's not something deliberately designed. It's an emergent property of the internet we're building. Right? But think of it as smart things that affect the world in a direct and physical manner. And that speaks directly to automation and to autonomy. And it is getting more powerful as we connect things to it, as we give it more processing. And this is what's eating the world. And what it means is that computer security becomes everything security. All the lessons we know from computer security become broadly applicable. And we'll see it in some of these discussions about WannaCry or different IoT malware. Security and complexity and vulnerabilities and patching and attacks and incident response. And all those same conversations are happening over again with medical devices and cars and voting machines and all of these things, with one critical difference: the effects are much greater. And the Internet of Things, these cyber-physical systems, right, these computers and processes that affect the world in a direct physical manner, have vital and lasting effects. We see this in conversations about predictive policing. Well, algorithms that determine who gets a loan, who goes to college, what kind of government services they get. In the United States, we learn there are algorithms that determine who gets released from prison and how bail is set, and they turn out to be racist. We're seeing algorithms that do automatic debt collection. And we now have cars that repossess themselves. If you're late in a payment, they automatically shut off. Right, there's a vertical integration here that I think really threatens the openness and accessibility of the internet. And as these systems and connections are owned by different companies. I mean, not just Facebook, but Philips for lighting and home automation. Or Apple becoming sort of a single point of connection for IoT devices. Leads to centralization, leads to monopolies, and we know the problems with that. There's all the sensors that will continue to erode privacy as they collect data about us and allow for ubiquitous surveillance on at a level that even now we consider excessive. Right, think of Siri, think of Alexa, some of those devices automatically listening or automatically sensing. I mean, a lot of this has the potential to deepen social inequities and reinforce social divides. We've already been talking about the digital divide. It's going to get worse. And specific to our field, the immediate security effects are much greater. Right? Cyber-physical systems have real-world consequences. We're used to the CIA triad: confidentiality, integrity, availability. Most of the time, computer security is about confidentiality. Most of the companies out there deal with privacy and security of data. How can we keep data where it's supposed to be and not where it shouldn't be? But when you start going into cyber-physical systems, the integrity and availability threats are much greater than the confidentiality threats. Right, we know WannaCry is ransomware against computers. We saw in this country, it meant turning people away from hospitals. That is an availability attack. That is not a confidentiality attack. You start thinking about ransomware against other devices, against cars, against medical devices directly. You know, it suddenly matters much more than against computers. Information manipulation is an increasing threat. In the past couple of years in the United States, both James Clapper, our former director of national intelligence, and Mike Rogers, our current NSA director, have testified before Congress talking about these types of threats. Denial of service, right? Hacking becomes a bigger deal as these systems have real implications to life and property, right? SCADA systems are so vulnerable, and they have real world effects. And now, you know, and confidentiality becomes even more important as these systems know more about us, and weirdly, as they become autonomous. So here's a question you should think about for the next year, because the answer is not obvious. Should autonomous robots have end-to-end encrypted communications with each other? I'm not sure they should. At least not yet, right? But maybe that's a good idea. This is a hard question. There's going to be a bunch of those questions. I think there's a lot we have to think about our cell phones becoming a centralized controller. If you have an IoT device, almost certainly it is being controlled by your phone. And that gives Apple and Google a lot of control here. Now, class breaks, you know, we're used to the notion of class breaks. They are foreign in the non-computer world. We're used to conversations about vulnerabilities and disclosure. Now, we know about full disclosure and why that's a good thing. It's less clear when we're talking about airplane avionics. But we know that's the only way to get security, yet it's a threat that actually affects lives. Right? Same computers, different outcomes. It is fundamentally different between your spreadsheet crashes and you lose your data and your heart defibrillator crashes and you lose your life. It could be the same computers, the same operating systems, the same software, the same vulnerabilities, the same exploit. Different applications, vastly different outcomes. Or class breaks. I mean, auto manufacturers know how cars fail. Cars have parts. Parts have mean time between failures. They fail at some rate. You do the math. You figure out how your car fails. Right? Self-driving cars, computer cars, fail that way, but they also fail a different way. All the cars work great until one day when none of them do. That's a failure mode that we are used to, that the real world has no experience with. So I have five truisms about security on the internet that I think are going to be more broadly relevant to security everywhere. And I want to go over them. So the first is that almost all software, is poorly written and insecure. Right? We know this. We know that the market doesn't pay for quality software. The adage is good, fast, and cheap, pick any two. The market has picked fast and cheap at the expense of good, pretty much everywhere. Right? Software doesn't work very well. Poor software is full of bugs. Some bugs are vulnerabilities. Some vulnerabilities are exploitable. And that's where we are. Second truism, the extensibility of computerized systems means that everything can be used against us. Now, this is important. You cannot constrain the functionality of a computerized device. Right? I'm holding in my hand a mechanical watch. No matter how hard I try, this cannot be anything other than a watch. That's all it is. That's all it'll ever be. Put a computer in this, and it can do anything you program it to. About 3 weeks ago, I saw an article. Someone programmed their digital thermostat to play the computer game Doom. Right? You laugh, but you are not surprised. It's a computer. It's got a CPU. It's got an operating system. It can run software. Of course it could play Doom. Right? That's the way computers work. This means their systems are harder to secure because, well, one, designers can't anticipate every use condition. Two, these systems are constantly upgraded with new features and new insecurities. They're upgraded by the manufacturer, and they are also upgraded by the attackers who dump malware on them. That's all about extensibility. Truism three, the complexity of these systems result in new insecurities. So complexity is the worst enemy of security. I mean, a decade ago, it gave hour-long talks on that sentence. And we all know the reasons. We know about the attack surface, the fact that the attacker has to find one vulnerability, defender has to defend them all of the different ways an attacker can get in. Basically, we know it means that in computers, attack is easier than defense by a lot. This also means that security testing is hard. Too many options, too many configurations, too many interactions. This is now going to be true for everything. This also leads to truism four. There are new vulnerabilities in the interconnections. It actually doesn't surprise us that the more we connect things to each other, the more vulnerabilities in one thing affect another thing. I mean, remember the Mirai botnet. A vulnerability in IoT, you know, digital video recorders and webcams allowed attackers to launch a DDoS attack against a DNS name server, which caused a bunch of popular websites to fall over. Not a surprise in this room, shocked the rest of the world. Right, that you could have that kind of cascade. And there are lots of cascades. Remember Target Corporation? They were hacked through a vulnerability in an HVAC contractor that was only working in several stores in Pennsylvania. That resulted in the corporate network being hacked. And the weird thing is, right, you could take two secure systems, put them together, and create vulnerabilities. You know, read Matt Honig's story, a reporter, maybe 2011, about how his identity was stolen. It was a cascade of vulnerabilities, none of which were fatal by themselves, but it was a string of three or four of them that caused the bad result. This makes these vulnerabilities hard to fix because nobody might be at fault. The vulnerability could be an emergent property. All right, last trend, computers are differently vulnerable. All right, the internet is naturally empowering. It allows things to scale to great degrees. That's why it's such a cool industry. But it also allows attacks to scale. Right, the notion of class breaks, that you could find a vulnerability that will work in every version of Windows 7 out there. Or every Tesla Model S of this year. You know, and as we have monocultures, this is even more severe. And this trend becomes more critical as the systems become more critical. I mean, remember, we're building a robot that infects the entire world. So we're now concerned about things like crashing all the cars or shutting down all the power plants. And also not like the real world, we're not concerned about the security of the average attacker. I mean, I live in Minneapolis. If there is a burglar here in London who's very good, I don't care. He's not going to fly to Minneapolis to break into my house. My geography works to my advantage here. And the fact that burglars can only rob like a house a night works to my advantage. These fail on the internet. The smartest internet attacker on the planet is the one you're worrying about, not the average. Right? The guy, and we know who he is, who wrote the Mirai botnet, posted the code. There are something like three new Mirai botnet variants that show up every day. No surprise to us, shocking to the world. So this is what we know about computer security, and this is what's going to be true about security everywhere. And this is a hard tech problem. There's a lot of people working on it, a lot of companies, a lot of universities. And, you know, we're starting to see some technologies emerge, some secure building blocks to build IoT devices, some internet network systems that assume malicious nodes on the network and try to build security anyway, ways to limit catastrophic risks and contain vulnerabilities. I mean, my guess is we're not going to solve this anytime soon. We're going to muddle through just as we have been in computers over the past couple of decades. In the near term, I think vendors are trying to come up with guidelines and standards. I collected them a few months ago, and I did a blog post, about 3 months old. There are about 20 different IoT standards, security standards documents by different industry organizations. Largely they say basically the same things. I mean, good security practices, testing, patching, avoiding known vulnerabilities, avoiding default passwords or insecure defaults, guidelines for data minimization, data protection, data accessibility, support for responsible research, something about a fail-safe mode, or in some cases, an offline mode. But it shouldn't be that if your refrigerator doesn't connect to the internet, that it stops keeping your food cold. In some way, the core functionality maintains. These are all good lists. The hard part is getting them adopted. Right now, they're voluntary and really aspirational. And really, until now, we've largely left computer security to the market. And that's worked mostly okay, not great. There are a lot of externalities at work. The interdependencies are really great, and markets just can't solve collective action problems, right? That's not what they do. And we have been okay with these imperfect solutions because the effects of failure just weren't that great. Right? You reboot your phone regularly or your app, so what? But that's changing. And that's going to force us to change. And the economics of the Internet of Things are different. Our computers and phones are secure as they are for two basic reasons. One, there's a team of engineers at Apple and Microsoft and Google that work to design security into these systems as they're being built. And two, those same teams are on call to quickly write and disseminate patches when vulnerabilities appear. This is not true for low-cost embedded systems like DVRs and home routers. These are produced at a much lower cost and lower profit margin. They're often built offshore by third parties, and they just don't have standing security teams associated with them. Even worse, many of these devices have no way to be patched. I mean, right now, the way you update your DVR is to throw it away and buy a new one. That is the patch mechanism. Right, we also get our security from the fact that these devices churn. You know, our computers last 3 years, our phones 3 years. Right, Microsoft eventually says, look, I'm not going to support Windows 95 anymore. Apple says the same thing. Right, their operating system, they say, look, you're on your own. You need to upgrade. That ecosystem isn't there for the Internet of Things. Right, we replace our DVRs every 5 to 10 years, our refrigerators every 25 years. Right, I want to replace my home thermostat approximately never. And it gets a little weirder. You buy a new car today here in London, although why you would, I don't know. Let's say you don't live in London, you live outside of London. You buy a new car. Right, that software is written a few years ago. You're going to drive that car for 10 years. You're going to sell it. It'll be driven for another 5 to 10 years. Then it'll be sold again, put in a boat, sent to someplace like Nairobi, where it'll be driven for another 25 years. So here we have car software that has to work for 50 years, 40 years. You go back to your company and try to boot up a 40-year-old computer. Try to download the security patches. Try to get it working. We in our industry do not know how to do that because we haven't yet. And we're going to start having to. Right? In a lot of cases, the market can't fix this because neither the buyer nor the seller care. And so your DVR might be part of the Mirai botnet. I don't know. You don't know. Right? You can't tell. It's working. And kind of you don't actually care because it was cheap. It's working. What's the problem? Right? The problem is that somebody else is the victim of a DDoS attack because of your insecure DVR, but it doesn't matter to you. You know, I really stress that we are going to get government intervention here because the market will not fix these problems by itself. And that's actually normal. The market rarely fixes safety and security problems without government intervention. This is true for food safety and security, for automobile safety, for airplane safety, for product safety, for financial instrument safety. Companies do not do this by themselves. They need the government to force them. And this is becoming big. Right? Gartner estimates we're adding 2 billion IoT devices per year. You'll see numbers like 30 to 50 billion by 2020. I think that number is not the right metric. We're really good at a lot of devices. What we're not good at is a lot of different kinds of devices. It's not that it's 50 billion. That's going to be millions of different types of devices. That's what's going to cause the problems. Right? A lot of this will be cheap and low-hanging fruit for attackers. Think of them as entry points into larger systems. Think of larger and more powerful botnets. Right? Think of it, you know, in these sub-few-pound devices. So out in the world, there are two basic paradigms of security. There's paradigm A, which is secure it well and properly the first time. This comes from the world of dangerous things, right? Planes, automobiles, medical devices, buildings. This is the world of regulations, codes, standards, certifications, licensing, testing. Then there's paradigm B, which is make sure your security is agile. And this comes from the fast-moving and heretofore largely benign world of computer security. Right, this is rapid prototyping, rapid updates, survivability, recoverability, mitigation, adaptability. Right, these two worlds are colliding. They're colliding in our cars, in our medical devices, in our voting machines, in our building control systems, our traffic control systems. And we need to figure out how to merge these two ways of thinking about security. And actually, we're not very good at it yet. You know, we don't know how to deal with the fact that Windows XP is still in 95% of all the ATM machines. In 2013, Chrysler. They had a recall, 1.4 million cars back to the dealership to fix a software vulnerability. Compare that to Tesla, which now routinely downloads patches to cars overnight, just like Apple does to your phone. Primarily, I think this is a policy problem. And governments tend to have a limited toolbox of things they can do. They can work in an area what's known as ex ante, before the fact. So think of regulations on products and product categories, or licensing of individuals or products, or testing requirements or best practices. Those are all ex ante. There's things Government can do ex post, after the fact. So fines for insecurity or liabilities when things go wrong and lawsuits, those are all ex post. There are things the government can do in terms of disclosure. So think of product labeling requirements or other transparency measures or a consumer reports like testing agency or some kind of a forensics agency. In the United States, there's an entire agency that all they do are investigate plane crashes, not in order to fine airlines or aircraft manufacturers, but to produce forensic reports that aircraft manufacturers can use in future designs. And there's also things government can do to affect the environment. So think about funding for research or education, or using its own procurement to drive standards or improvements. And I think we're getting a lot of movement now, starting in regulation, especially in Europe. I think the new GDPR is going to be real interesting to watch. And very strong privacy and security measures, even stronger penalties. We still have to see how it's going to be enforced, but I'm hopeful. You know, also, I don't know what the organization is, but all manufactured goods sold in Europe have that CE mark on them. And you might all know this, I didn't. What that basically means is conforms to all applicable standards. And right now, there is a standard in that group for responsible disclosure. There is a standard in the works for secure defaults and patch management. And what I like about those kind of standards is because Europe is such a big market, they get incorporated into trade agreements. Right? They show up in GATT. So they sort of diffuse themselves around the world. In the United States, we're seeing less. Some states, California particularly, are starting to do things. And what I like about these regulations is that they'll incent private industry. And the international considerations are real interesting here. It's software is write once, sell everywhere. So automobiles, different standards, different countries, and car manufacturers make different cars. The car that you buy in Mexico is not the same car you buy in the United States because the emission control standards are different. Right? Software doesn't work that way. It is cheaper to maintain one software code base than it is to make different versions, different countries. So likely, the big market, most stringent regulations will govern everything. So I think regulation is coming. I think it's coming in a big way. I mean, there's a lot of worry that regulations stifle innovation. I think you look at the history, that tends not to be the case. It's always the fear whenever regulation is talked about. I mean, we heard it with restaurant sanitation codes or with automobile safety regulations. But the industry always ends up adapting. There's no real evidence. And I think we will too, and we're going to have to. Because, and this is my last point, governments will get involved regardless. Right? The risks are too great and the stakes are too high. Governments are already involved in physical security, and the real physical threats from the Internet of Things will force governments to act. Because we're talking about fear, and you know this, nothing incents a government to do something like fear. You also know that nothing incents a government to do something stupid like fear. And this is where we have to get involved. That the choice is not between regulation and no regulation, like it used to be. The choices are between smart government regulation and stupid government regulation. And if we don't want regulation to be imposed on us from the outside with little thought and little time, we need to start thinking about this and getting ahead of this. Because it is coming. It will just take one disaster before your government or my government or both do something, and they will do the thing they can grab the quickest. And we have to ensure that it is something that's also smart. So thank you. I want to say one more thing before I get off stage. I did a book signing at the IBM Resilient booth earlier, so you all missed it. But I signed about 100 books already, and I have to go to the airport and go home, but the books are staying. So the fastest 100 of you, or maybe the strongest if you tackle each other, can get a book. Enjoy the show. Thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.